Welcome. My name is Dr. Christopher Taylor, and I want you to know that it's okay to be sad, that it's okay to feel lost, and that it's okay to struggle, that we all struggle. But today, none of that matters, because today is about you, and today is about helping you become the best you possible. So for now, relax, take a deep breath, and enjoy some thoughts for your self-examination. Welcome back to For Self-Examination. I am your host, Dr. Christopher Taylor, and we've got a great show for you today. We have Sue on, and Sue has asked that we protect her identity a little bit. I don't mean that to be a juicy tease. I just mean that she just gets pretty deep with her personal struggles, and so we're happy to protect that information for her and share her story, which is a gripping and harrowing story. It's amazing. But before we talk about that, I do want to apologize. I don't know what the issue is with the microphone on this episode, but my voice is a little muffled, so I apologize for that. If you have to listen a little bit more closely. Also, at some point, my daughter knocks over a vase, and it's like we got to go deal with this. I'm so sorry. You might even be able to hear her screaming in the background right now. It's just like pandemonium. But you know, we do what we have to do to get things done. So I'm going to get into Sue's story. It is a harrowing story about depression and breast cancer and divorce, and all the while choosing to be happy through all of this. Her son attempts suicide. Her uncle commits suicide. All of these things that occur in her life, and depression runs through her family. All of these struggles, and yet through it all, she chooses to be happy. And we're going to get into that and why and how she does that and just really kind of enjoy her story. But before we do, if you'll recall, this season we're talking about happiness as a battery. And a battery has cells and capacity. So keep that in mind as you listen to to Sue's story and her ability to continue to choose joy and happiness in her life. So just remember, if you have not listened to the previous episodes, please go back and take a look, and we'll get into Sue's story right after this. This episode of For Self-Examination is brought to you by the Empathy app, the app made by therapists to help you find your path.
Hi, I'm Jerry, and I want to congratulate you for taking the first step on your path to a better you. Sometimes we feel a little overwhelmed. Whether it is with feelings of sadness or worry or anger, our emotions can feel a little too much at times, and that's okay. Welcome to Empathy.
You can find the Empathy app on any iOS and Android device at the Apple App Store or Google Play Store. You can also download the app through the website, empathicholdings.com. Download the app today and get started down your path.
Hi, Sue. Welcome to For Self-Examination. Where do you find yourself today?
I am north of Atlanta in a suburb, so I'm not in the middle of everything.
Oh, I wish I was not in the middle of everything. Dallas is way too congested for me at times. Okay, so you have a gripping story to share with us. Do you want to just jump right into that, or do you want to talk a little bit about your view of happiness first?
Well, I think I'll just jump in because I can give you my view on happiness. For the past probably 20 years, I've been, I want to say, struggling with the idea of happiness. I've wanted to be happy. You know, everybody has things in their life that they're, that's tossed upon them that they have no control over. But happiness is something that I've researched and I've thought about and I've tattooed on my body in several places. So it's a subject that is, you know, close to me. I read, my first book that I read on happiness was The Happiness Project from Gretchen Rubin. And it was interesting to find out that Iceland was the number one country that scored the highest on happiness because failing was a positive thing. But it also just gave me insights into happiness among other countries because I've traveled abroad so much. You know, I've had a lot of issues in my lifetime that were not of my doing, and I've tried to plow through them. And I can talk a little bit about how that started, if that's where you want me to go.
Yeah, let's take it.
Okay. So severe depression has run in my family on my mother's side. My uncle was severely depressed. He committed suicide. My brother was severely depressed before depression was really a thing. They basically medicated him and he had to go into a psychiatric ward. And my parents weren't really educated, so they didn't know really how to deal with it. And he has suffered for 45 years with depression. So it didn't seem to affect me. But when I had children, we were always kind of looking out for that. And ironically, we didn't see it in my son until he tried to commit suicide at the age of 18. We kind of knew something was up and we kept taking him to therapists and psychiatrists and they kept saying, we don't think he's depressed. So he wasn't really treated for it. But I think part of it was he did not communicate the fact that he was so depressed. So been dealing with that for a while, and he's older now. And I seriously think that kids who are going through puberty and already going through such a difficult time, when they have depression, they just aren't grown up enough and mature enough to handle it. And then my daughter at age 12 came to my husband and I at that time and said, I think I need to see somebody. And I had her fill out the paperwork before we went to the therapist because she was 12 and she liked to fill out papers. Well, she answered the questions that I should have answered, but it gave her truth that she had very dark thoughts. So she was diagnosed with severe anxiety, and depression is, of course, a very good friend of anxiety. So both children through their teens were seeing therapists, psychiatrists, were hospitalized during that time because my daughter's anxiety came out in the form of migraines. So she didn't attend a lot of high school. She was attending virtually before it was even a thing. And they're 24 and 27 now and doing really, really, really well. But it took a long way to get there. So.
Wow. Well, that is gripping. It would be. So both children struggling with depression, anxiety, suicidal ideation all throughout their teens. As a mom, what was that? How did that impact you? What was that like for you?
Well, of course you want to help, but you really don't know how to help. So at the beginning, when we first started dealing with it, you know, I think we go through what every parent goes through, like, why can't you be happy? Not realizing that it's like pneumonia. And you wouldn't say to a person with pneumonia, why can't you just get up and run a mile? That it really is an illness that they don't really have control over. And it's constantly a learning experience, even now. Like I wish sometimes I could have a podcast to talk to parents who are going through this issue with their kids to give them a little bit of insight into what we've been through. And, you know, when Julian tried to commit suicide, I wasn't surprised, but I was surprised. Like, because he didn't communicate it to us, and he was seeing a therapist, and he was taking medication at that time, you know, we thought it was okay. And getting that phone call, it was a rude awakening for him and for us, so that, you know, we were able to talk to him and say, you know, when it gets that bad, you need to let us know about this. But I think when you're in the depths of it like that, you're not thinking rationally, right? That's, you don't think rationally when you're in the depths of depression, and you don't think rationally when you're in the depths of anxiety.
So, yeah, I always love the reference of the fish in water. You know, it's not like he really knows how deep he is. You know, he doesn't even really know it's water. He's just swimming around.
Right. But plus, you're not mature enough to communicate your feelings at that point either. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if there's a way, and I don't know if psychiatry and therapy has come to a point where, how do you get to that level of discussion with a child who is depressed or has anxiety, mm-hmm. and doesn't really know how to talk about it?
Yep.
So we've always been very supportive. We were lucky to have great health insurance. Both kids always had access to therapists and psychiatrists, and we had to do our homework to find good therapists and good psychiatrists, because every therapist and psychiatrist is not really good. Mm-hmm.
I know that for a fact. Yeah. Sadly.
I know. So that's been something that I've dealt with. So I guess that's why happiness has been brought to the forefront of my life, just trying to get through this. And then you add kind of the other stuff that, you know, a lot of people go through. I went through a tumultuous divorce. I just got done with treatment for breast cancer. So, you know, how do you be happy during those things? How do you get to a point where you're like, you know, you're not beaten down by life?
I'm assuming you have to have had some sort of depression through this time period.
You know, with the divorce, it was very, very hard. And I did have depression, and I did see multiple therapists to try and work through that. With the breast cancer, I kind of just fought it head on. And, you know, that made me realize how much I wanted to, you know, to travel and do other things with my life. So, you know, just like when anybody else gets an experience where, you know, I wasn't near death, but you start thinking about death.
Yeah.
I decided to travel to work remotely every quarter for a week in a new place, because that's something that excites me when I travel and go to a new place. So I went to Colorado. I went to California. I have a trip planned right now to Arizona by myself for a week, just to kind of meander around Arizona and see some sights.
God, how I envy you. How I envy you.
You know, I have to now.
With two small kids, it's not really vacation. It's just parenting in a different location, you know. And now we have to take car seats and cribs and all these things, you know, anti-suffocation devices. Because apparently everything is ready to suffocate your children. Everything wants to do it nowadays, you know. Like the amount, like when we show up to the airport, American Airlines is like, guys, you just need to become executive platinum. Like, this is going to be too
expensive. I remember those days. But I do, like, I think about what brings me joy. And, you know, when I was traveling to Colorado last, it was August, and we were in rural Colorado, and I just woke up one Wednesday. It was like Wednesday at 11 o'clock, and we were walking around this little town, and I was like, oh my God, I am so happy. Like, I haven't felt this happy in such a long time. And, you know, obviously I was on vacation and I was in a beautiful place. You know, and the other thing that makes me really happy at home is I've been a mountain biker for about a decade. And I love when I'm at the beginning of a trail and it's, you know, spring or summer and I'm starting to ride and it's 6:30, 7 o'clock and I'm in the woods and I'm on my bike and I know I've got an hour and a half or so to just be there. And it makes me so present. And that physical activity is just where I go to experience joy.
Yeah. Do you do any of those extreme trails? I've seen a few of those. I've hiked some in like Vail and other places.
I've been to Moab. Yeah. We were on an eight-hour ride, 30 miles. I almost died at least once and I cried twice, but I did it. I did it. So
sounds like joy.
Yeah. Yeah. But there's something about being outside and, you know, going downhill and being around nature that really, I think, you know, makes me smile.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I want to ask you about, you know, travel and nature, but before I do that, my child knocked over a vase. So if you're hearing vacuuming, in the background, I'm not going to edit that out. It's just life. So apparently my daughter Ella has knocked over a vase again. It's probably the vase I just bought to replace the vase that she knocked over last week, which begs the question, why do we have vases? But apologies for that.
So, no problem.
So you said travel. You haven't felt this good in a long time. So what was it about the travel? What was it about nature that filled you with joy or reconnected you with joy?
I think I lived abroad when I was in my third year of college. And so I spent a year abroad, and throughout that year, I traveled all over Europe. And then every year after that, until I had kids, I would go abroad every year for the holidays. And I just love not knowing what to expect every day. I love waking up and going, I don't know what's going to happen today. That sense of adventure. And of course, I think being home during the pandemic and having to go through chemo and radiation and not being able to really do very much probably made me more, you know, when I did travel, it was such so refreshing after being home and doctor appointments every other day. So when we were in this beautiful place in Durango and Silverton, Colorado, with the mountains in the background, and it was just a beautiful day, and we were hiking and exploring, I think that connects me to who I used to be before I got married and had kids, to my younger self. And also, it was just so much more enjoyable because I hadn't been traveling and I had just gotten through, you know, my last radiation appointment was July 8th and we left 4 weeks later. So it was a sense of freedom, I think. And
yeah.
And success that I had gotten through the therapy.
That's fascinating. I'm curious about your identity throughout this process. It seems like you've had a lot of a jarring change going from your single young self to married mom of two kids struggling with depression and anxiety, and then to go to divorce, then to go to chemo, cancer patient. What happened to your identity through all that?
I mean, I tried to keep it. My go-to place is usually like I work because I have my own business. And I'm comfortable behind the computer and working. Like working is normal. You know what I mean? And I think when you're going through extreme situations, you're kind of taking out of your normal life. So like I remember my mom passed away when I was 26 from lung cancer. And I remember her just wanting to get back to work and wanting to do the normal things that everybody did. So, you know, especially as a single mom who needed to, you know, support myself and the kids, and my ex did help. But I was at that point, the breadwinner. I would work and that would kind of calm me down. And I was successful at my job. And the same thing with chemo and radiation, like I never missed a day of work. I didn't take any time off and I was, you know, I told myself I wasn't going to let how people normally talk about chemo and therapy and cancer and how it affects them. I didn't want that to make me feel a certain way if I really didn't feel a certain way. So I let my body tell me how I felt and I was able to continue working. And of course, with the pandemic and not being able to travel, I didn't have that much more to do. So I just continued my normal life. But I think when you're a woman and you get married and have kids, everybody loses part of their identity because you're not doing things for yourself 100% of the time. You're doing things 100% of the time for your kids. And especially since my kids needed so much support and help, they came first. And, you know, mom's always come second in that experience. So I think now that I'm 60, my kids are older, they don't need me as much. I'm coming back to who I was before.
Yeah. Interesting. Yeah. I've always been a big believer that marriage is a death process, that, you know, the individual has to die, kind of like two metals, you know, they have to be brought to boiling point and then mixed to make an amalgam, a new identity is born. Which I think is difficult for a lot of people. They want to hold on to who they were before. And then we have this clash, you know, and same thing with fatherhood, as I'm discovering, which is a much more difficult process, I think. And then I would imagine even more so with motherhood. Well, thank you for sharing that, and that identity piece. We're exploring the idea of happiness as a battery, and the battery has four cells. And one of those cells, I believe, is identity. And I think that identity exists in many levels. And I think that's a big part of it, which seems to be a big part of it in your case.
Well, and I think as you speak to more women who are older too, when they come out of the other side of it, it's easier to see than when you're going through it. Everybody's life, you know, who has children and is working, it's just, you know, every day is kind of a little bit chaotic. So you're not really thinking about it.
Yeah, that seems to be the theme of the new Sex and the City show. My wife's been watching it. I don't know why. I think they rebranded it too or something.
Yes. And it's about everybody's life. Somebody experiences death. Somebody experiences, you know, being from heterosexual to homosexual and finding yourself and who you are.
Right. I catch it when I come out of my office to get more ice.
One thing I did want to share too is, so I have this necklace, which is a Chinese symbol for happiness that my aunt just gave me, you know, probably 10 years ago. And, I have a lot of Asians come up to me and be like, do you know what this means? And I'm like, yes, it means happiness. And this is the tattoo I have on my ankle.
Okay.
I had this tattoo, which is in French, it says Le bonheur est un choix, which is happiness is a choice. And this was when I was going through all the issues with my kids. Yeah. I had to remember that I could wake up and choose to be happy despite everything that was going on around me.
That's fast.
Like, it was my choice to get up and be miserable and be like, oh my God, I have all this stuff going on in my life. Or to try to, you know, see the positive in the day, the week, the month, whatever we were experiencing at that time. So I think a lot of it is just your attitude towards your day-to-day life.
Yeah, I'm always too afraid to get, you know, Japanese or Chinese symbols. I'm always worried that somebody's going to sell me something that says happiness, but it actually says like Kung Pao chicken. Anyone that speaks that language is going to be, this guy's an idiot. Or he really loves Kung Pao chicken. I do. It's fantastic. But anyway.
I have a question for you.
Yes, ma'am.
So obviously you're doing this because you're interested in individual happiness and what they're going through. And I'm sure you see a lot of people who are going through depression. So how do you, I mean, I know there's not one piece of advice to offer people on how to see the glass half full versus half empty, but out of all your research and maybe books that you've read, is there anything that you've come away with that has helped you understand it better?
Absolutely. I think the biggest thing that stands out to me is comparison. That comparison is the thief of joy. And that it is, I believe, the sickness unto death. You know, I think Kierkegaard labels it as despair, but I think comparison is what takes us to despair. The more we focus on other people and if they are happy or not and how that relates to our happiness, I think the more it creates an environment where we're focused on other things and constantly looking at how can I get that instead of just focusing on your own life and asking the question, am I happy with this? Am I content with this? You know, am I happy where I am today? And if I'm not, why? And what do I want to do about it? And if I am, maybe reflect on how I got here and, you know, keep doing that. I'm not a big birthday person. My mom would disagree and say that I was all about it as a kid. But I don't know, maybe going into adulthood, I'm much more of an introvert. Big parties are not really my style. You know, I started a tradition for myself. I don't really do it anymore now with kids. It's kind of impossible. But where I would, I even went so far one year as to turn the power off to my apartment, which was kind of cool, where I just spend the day in reflection. So just spend that day alone, isolated, you know, dawn to dusk, watch the sunrise, watch the sunset, do a lot of self-thought, a lot of self-discovery, journaling, walking my dog, you know, all that stuff. And just spend a day with me and just reflecting on how I got to where I am, absent of comparison to others. Because I find that comparison to be the real villain in all this. And I think the internet has done a great job of making that really, really difficult to escape.
Right. And smartphones and just disconnecting. I think that's probably why I felt so joyful too in Colorado, because we were totally disconnected. And one thing that you said, so I read a book called, I just fell upon it in the library, and it was called The Comfort Book by Matt Haig, who is a New York Times bestseller, but he also experienced severe anxiety and depression during his life. And like a 10-year-old, I cut out things from excerpts from the book that really touched me. And
I just want to describe that page real quick to everybody listening. It's literally like she literally cut out paragraphs physically from the book, it looks like, and then put them on a scanner all together and then scan that onto one page. Like it looks like a collage.
That exactly.
School or something. Yeah, it's fantastic. Thank you.
And one of the quotes is, I used to worry about fitting in until I realized the reason I didn't fit in was because I didn't want to.
Yeah.
So talk about comparing yourself to other people and then just realizing what you need to be who you are, and it's okay to be who you are. But that book really does talk about, you know, precious moments and remembering the good things when you're feeling bad and just letting yourself be who you are. And it's okay not to be 100% active all the time. Like in today's society, we just feel like we always need to be doing something to be productive. And, you know, even that is killing a lot of people.
Yep. And the, you know, there's a skyrocket rise in teen suicides and preteen suicide attempts and suicides, which basically were non-existent in 2009, which was the same year that Instagram was available on your smartphone. So there's just a lot of that comparison going around. So,
yeah.
Last thoughts, any advice or thoughts you would give to somebody who might be struggling with the amount of adversity that you have struggled with?
I think it is important to talk to somebody and not hold it in and to acknowledge your feelings. I mean, there have been many times when I just sat and sobbed and needed to and felt better afterwards. And also, if you have children who are experiencing depression or anxiety, make sure you do your homework and just don't accept what people tell you, even if they're psychiatrists or therapists or whatever, because every kid is different and experiences it differently. So as a parent, I think it's important for you to educate yourself.
Yeah, absolutely. Education is power, and that will set us free. So
yes.
Thank you so much for that, Sue. I really want to take a moment to give a shout out to OK to Say, as a nonprofit based here in Dallas that helps to foster and promote conversations about mental wellness. So I just can't echo that enough, how important it is to talk about it. So please talk about it. Go to oktosay.org to learn more about that. Thank you for your time and thank you for being here.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Bye.
If you've enjoyed this podcast, don't keep it a secret. Share it with your friends and family. Tell everyone. Put it on Twitter. We'd love it if you give us a 5-star rating and a review. We always love feedback. And then, of course, like and subscribe to make sure you don't miss an episode. You can find us on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, iHeartRadio, or wherever you get yours. As a reminder, Taylor Counseling Group is in the DFW area with offices from Dallas to Fort Worth and in Waxahachie as well. We are also now in the Houston and San Antonio areas as well. So if you or somebody you know might be interested in getting some counseling, feel free to give us a call, 214-530-0021. You can send us an email, info@taylorcounselinggroup.com, and you can look us up on the web at taylorcounselinggroup.com. You can find us on Twitter as well, at @TCG_Dallas. So if you need us, we're here, but if not, no worries. I just hope you enjoy the show.
Thank you again, Sue, for being on the show. What an amazing, inspiring, uplifting story and journey that you've had. I just seriously cannot thank you enough for sharing that and trusting us with that story and that space here. So thank you. There were several things in Sue's story that allowed her to advocate for joy in her life. But above all else, there's several things I want to mention, but I mean, this is a woman that struggled with depression running throughout her family, had a family member commit suicide, her own son attempted suicide. She has been depressed. She went through a divorce. She had to go through breast cancer. All of these things crashing down on you at once. I mean, that has to be so difficult. And yet, taking all of this trauma, all of this tragedy, and choosing to be happy? Wow. That is so inspiring, so uplifting. It really inspires me to re-examine my struggles, to say, maybe it's not that bad. Maybe I've got it twisted. Maybe the struggles of my life, which are real and difficult, but are they that real? Are they that difficult? Is my life that challenging? You know, a broken vase or two, is it that big of a deal? So just really keeping that perspective in mind is just so powerful and inspiring. I really want to thank you, Sue, for being on the show. Thank you so much. And this idea of how to talk about it, I think, is so powerful. So, you know, I mentioned OKToSay.org. It's a wonderful organization that can just help you learn to know that it's okay to say that you're not okay. And there's great resources there, as well as at GrantHalliburton.org as well, another nonprofit here in Dallas that is just motivated to help people talk about mental illness and mental health concerns. You know, we all struggle with depression. We all struggle with anxiety from time to time. And for some of us, it gets so deep and so heavy that suicide seems to be the only option. So if you are struggling with that or know someone who is, please check out those resources. Check out the National Suicide Hotline. All of those things. Help is available. And you can learn how to talk about it, and you can find good people to talk to. But through all this, and in some of our other episodes, the last episode with Travis as well, we talk about this idea of happiness as a choice. That despite all of these things, Sue summoned the courage to choose to be happy. Through all of this, she chose to be happy. She didn't let happiness wander into her life one day. She didn't complain about it. She didn't look for it. She chose to be happy. despite the depression, despite the family struggles in her life, despite the breast cancer, despite the divorce, she still chose to be happy. And one of the things that she talked about in that was finding and doing what you love. Finding and doing what you love. Take a moment. Take time in your life now to find what you love and go do it. Regardless of the cost or sacrifice, go and do it. Find it and do it. Powerful thoughts from Sue. But really, we talked about this concept of comparison, that we get caught up in comparing our lives, our choices with those around us. And I think for me, this is the core of it. This is where it all comes together, really, is Sue looks around her life, and instead of seeing what other people are doing, she focuses on what she wants to do. Soren Kierkegaard, 19th century philosopher, grandfather of existentialism, one of my personal heroes, and for whom this podcast is named after, wrote for self-examination for sure, but he wrote this other book called The Sickness Unto Death. And in it, he posits the idea that despair is the sickness unto death. And for me, comparison is the road that takes us there. Comparing your life to those around you is only going to rob you of joy. It is going to steal joy from you daily. And so I want to challenge you as you walk away from this podcast today. I want to challenge you to think deeply about the choices in your life. Are you choosing happiness, or are you choosing to compare yourself to others? And if you're comparing yourself to others, can you stop doing that now? Can you choose happiness in your own life? Let it happen for you. Choose to find what makes you happy, not to worry about what makes others happy. And go and do that thing. Go and do that. Go and be that. So I want to challenge you that comparison is the thief of joy, and it is a road to despair, and despair is the sickness unto death. It leads to depression, the darkest parts of our minds and souls. And I want to challenge you today to fight the urge to compare your life to others, to examine it, to choose what brings you joy and happiness, and go and do that most of all. I hope you have enjoyed these thoughts for your self-examination. I am your host, Dr. Christopher Taylor. And let happiness happen in your life.